Who am I and why am I here? I say, well, you're the pastor, Scott. You're supposed to be here. Who am I and why am I here? The church believes that we've got the answer to that question, don't we? It's like, that's why you're supposed to come to church, because we got the answer. But I think, especially in our Western culture, is what do you have that I already don't have? What do you have, Mr. Christian, Miss Christian, you churchgoer? What do you have that I already don't have? Do you have a better job than I do? Do you have a better education? Do you have better relationships? Do you have a better marriage? Do you have better behaved kids than I do? Do you live in a better neighborhood? Think of all those things. What are they looking for? What do you have that I don't have? Maybe yes, maybe no. You see, the world's looking for, we say we got the answer for a better future, for a better place, and yet they look at Christians, and do they see anything better than what they have? Christianity's got to be something deeper, more significant than those things. Because if you look at Christians, sometimes you come into church and you see more messed up people than what you do out in the world or any organization that you want to be involved in. I'm going to talk about something that God has given to every single human being this morning. And you'll see where we're talking about when we talk about this series of identity, of how it connects. Really, it's something, it's a standard issue. And I think about, you know, military, as they come in, they get standard issue uniform. Hopefully you get a t-shirt your size. But standard issue, you get your boots, you get your jacket, your pants, your socks, your t-shirt, even your underwear. Standard issue. And what the Bible scholars talk about, that standard issue that God has given, we're going to talk about this morning. And the word is common grace. Common grace. It's common, they labeled it common because every single human being gets this. Every single human being is given these things that we're going to talk about this morning. And it's grace, common grace. Grace because it's a gift. It's nothing that you go like, okay, go to show up, sign up, then you get it. Just like military. I don't have cool army green underwear like Chris does. Because I'm not in the army. I didn't get issued that. But these are things that we get. Every single human being. If you're born and you're here, you've been given these things. And like I said, it's what Bible scholars call a common grace. The first thing that God has given to every single person is God provides for everyone. God provides for everyone. And somebody think about, have you ever heard of a providential God? It really just means it's a God who provides. And you get Bible scholars, it's got to make them sound really kind of, God is providential. And it's like, so am I. I give my kids clothes and I give them something to eat. I'm providential too. But God is providing God. God shows His love by feeding and protecting us. Really, God created a world that produced fruit. You put something in the ground, a seed in the ground, and stuff grows out of it. I'm amazed that we have so many tomatoes. We have one tomato plant that has just spread out and produced so many. I made some more salsa yesterday afternoon to enjoy the football game with. And my wife wasn't home, so I used the whole jalapeno. I'm like, you know, when the wife's home, we can make it hot. And sometimes my jalapenos, and I have no idea, I've read stuff on it. Sometimes this guy looks the same as this guy, but this guy tastes like a bell pepper jalapeno, and this guy makes your lips sweat. Well, guess what kind I got? I got the kind that makes your forehead and your lips sweat. And it was like, it was really good. God created plants. He provided for us so that things would grow, that things would provide for us. He made sheep with wool and goats with, you know, hair, so that God would make a way for man to make clothing and animals and leather and all kinds of things, so that we would not only be fed but be clothed. He provided relationships that would nurture us, that would help us, that would protect us, that would grow us. You and I may not grow food, because I would starve if I had to last on just the tomatoes that I've grown. That's not enough. And so that I go down to the grocery store just like you, and I buy my food. I fill my shopping cart up, and I go to the checkout stand. The reality is that because of God's provision, He has gifted people to do those things. Because really, you and I are the beneficiaries. God's loving care comes to us largely through other people. You know, I'm sure if I could look around the room, I bet none of you, if any, have made your own clothes. But there was a time when that was standard. You made your own clothes. But I look on my tag, says Indonesia. Somebody in Indonesia has provided this shirt for me. I go to Fred Meyer, I go to Kohl's, or sometimes we shop online and buy things that somebody else has made. But God has gifted them to do those things. And a lot of us have heard this phrase that we're God's hands and feet. And that's true. It's just doing those work things of love and work. We are God's hands and feet, His providing for us. As we do those things, it's how we are practically touched by God. Not just food or clothing, but think about your gas station. How many of you can make your own fuel for your vehicle? I guess there's biodiesel, you know, and you can all kinds of, but you think about the heat for your home. Think about your furniture. It is all those things that we enjoy because somebody has worked, companies have been put together, somebody has worked to put those things. And as we experience God's practical care for us, we also experience His loving interactions from other people. It would really be a sad place if we didn't get touched by other people, if we didn't have relationships with people, somebody to have lunch with, somebody to work with. God provides for us. It's the same thing He gives every single person. Whether you are a follower of Christ or don't yet believe, your love and work reflect God's providential hand towards your neighbor. What you do is God's provision for the world. We are God's hands and feet to love and care for others. As believers, you and I begin to say, okay, I see God's hand in the lives of my neighbor. Even though there's a disconnect there, I realize that there's somebody who's building a factory. I think of Lowe's. You know, we have a big distribution center. We have Entech. You know, and they may not see the end product, but they're involved in how they love and provide for this world. As we become more aware, it's like we're made in God's image, then as Christians, we bring excellence to what we do. How we do our job. How, you know, I think about somebody who's just a checkout stand. I love my friend Sarah, and some of you guys remember Sarah. She's a checkout clerk at a Safeway. I always look for her aisle, and we just laugh because she's always got something funny to say, and then she takes her black marking pen out and puts smiley faces and notes on our groceries. So we will pull it out of the fridge, then I have a gallon of milk with a heart on it. It's like, that's so cool. And she says, now is this for you or for Jackie? I said, well, this is both of us. And so she wrote a bunch of stuff on it. And I said, I know Jackie, when she sees this, she'll know exactly who it's from. That although she's just doing checkout standing, Stan, She sees that as an opportunity to love and care for the world. There's an excellence that she gets to bring and say, you know what, I'm touching people. I have an influence in people, people's lives, by how I do my job. Our love and work are a vehicle for God's loving provision for the world. You see, a teacher meets her neighbor's need for knowledge. A mechanic meets his neighbor's need to repair their car. A parent meets his child's need for protection and maturity. Every single thing that we do, God's put in place to provide his provision of care in the world. What's challenging is we look at as Christianity as being somebody special or different. And I think about it, we need to start with our identity, recognizing that God has given his common grace to every single person, not because they earned it or deserve it, but because they're made in his image. All humans are made in God's image, not just Christians. All humans have been given gifts and talents and skills to do things. And you think about common grace, what the challenge of looking at skills is, God doesn't say, okay, you deserve this gift. Oh, no, we're not going to give you that one because somebody over here will use it better. Just like seed, God takes his gifts and spreads it across humanity. And he gives us skills and talents. And if you talk to everybody, I laugh as I've loved getting to know our church family because every single one of you are quirky just like me. Each of you have a personality and a saying, you know, and that's my story, and that's what I'm going to stick to, or, you know. Just those things that we are good at, those things we're bad at, those things that we like to do, those things we don't like to do. Every single one of us has been given a gift. It's interesting, as we talk about Christianity and common grace being across all humankind, we can be frustrated at times when we see non-Christians who really do better work than Christians. I remember my dad there was a season he was really bent on being aware of who Christians were. And I need to look back in the day, and maybe they still do the little ichthus, you know, on business cards or on the sign. You go, oh, that's a Christian. And my dad would take his car to this guy, and he was a terrible mechanic. He would fix his car, but it wouldn't get fixed. You ever been to a mechanic like that? But he was a Christian. He loved the Lord. He was a really nice guy, but he was a terrible mechanic. And the reason why is because God spread his gift all across humanity, and there are non-believers who are better mechanics than maybe some of your Christian friend. And recognizing that when God has given his gifts, I think James 1:17 is just the reality that every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of heavenly lights. That God's good gifts come to Christians and non-Christians, pre-Christians, post-Christians. It's a reality. You don't become a Christian, then God say, okay, now I'm going to give you the gift of making money. Now I'm going to give you the gift of understanding physics. And God says, hey, I'm going to spread my common grace to all humanity. And each of us are profoundly touched by each other. There is no part of our lives, small or large, that is not impacted by the love and work of others, regardless of what that work is, small or large, no matter who does it. I think about just a few years ago, the impact of my wife works for the Greater Albany School District public school system. And there's non-believers there, and there's lots of believers. But all of them came together with, several years ago, you can remember just the budget cuts and crunch because our economy took a dip. And therefore, all the tax revenue takes a dip. And they're like, we got to let teachers go. And somebody, and I don't know who came up with the idea, so somebody says, what if we all forego our wage increase? so that you don't have to let anybody go. Not only would they be able to keep their jobs, but we'd be able to serve students. Because it's not like the economy cuts and you have to make cuts and they don't need to have teachers anymore. The same number of students are there needed to be met. And all the teachers came together. And I had never heard that before, but it seemed so practically good. They all came together, believers, non-believers, say, hey, we're not going to take our pay increase this year. That our contract is guaranteed so that teachers will not lose their jobs. Can you imagine what a blessing that was to society to not lose your job? That's a travesty. You know, and some of you have lost your job, and you know how it just messes things up, and it takes months, maybe even years, to get out of the hole and the consequence of that. And yet, as they came together to do that good thing, followers of Christ will value all good work. Good work done by non-Christians and good work done by Christians. As Christians, our appreciation for love and work should be radically different than the world's. Because a good job is good to do. But as Christians, we should know why we're doing it. And it should be reflected in our attitude and quality and spirit of what we're doing. And honesty. Not only does God's common grace provide for us, but God's common grace reveals himself to everyone. God is a revealing God. God has revealed himself to humankind. We're all born with this primordial knowledge of God. You don't have to be taught it. It's not something from culture. It's something you know. It's like, this just didn't happen. There is order here. There is beauty here. God reveals himself in creation. I love Psalms 19. Beginning with verse 1, the heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth. Their words to the ends of the world. There's a communication going on that shouts God's amazing glory in his design. God reveals himself through creation. And God reveals himself also through just a preloaded conscience with a sense of honesty and justice and love and how we should treat others. You know, even atheists who believe there is no God, their reason for not believing there's a God is because of all the injustice, hatred, discord, dysfunction in the world. That's why they don't believe there's a God. Well, who told you that that was messed up? Why? Because God's given his gift, has revealed himself to everybody. They know, even though they say they don't believe in God, they know that things aren't the way they should be. They recognize injustice. They recognize when people are selfish. Where in the world did their sense of the way things should be come from? And God reveals himself through human culture. Isaiah 28, verses 24 to 29. When a farmer plows for planting, does he plow continually? Does he keep on breaking up and working the soil? When he has leveled the surface, does he not sow caraway and scatter cumin? Does he not plant wheat in its place, barley in its plot, and spelt in its field? Verse 26, his God instructs him and teaches him the right way. Verse 29, all this comes from the Lord Almighty, whose plan is wonderful, whose wisdom is magnificent. Now, God reveals himself in our ability to figure things out, to invent, to see a better way. Any advancement we have in culture is because God has taught. How many can make their own smartphone? It's amazing combination of technology. Back in the day, and I'll share how old I am, but live long and prosper. The communicator, the flip phone, the original flip phone, Captain Kirk. Technology, to have those ideas, came from God. Those things he discerned. I mean, really, you think about what the prophet was talking about. You don't just keep digging the dirt up. You dig it up and you prepare it and you put seed in it. You cover it up and then you wait for the rain to come and you take care of it. And then when it grows, you just don't look at it and let it die. You harvest it. How did people come to think of those things? God gave them the mind to understand that, to do something about it. We see what appears to us as discovery. I like this phrase that Timothy, oh wow, I just lost his last name here. Keller. Thank you, Bob. Timothy Keller wrote, he says, what appears to us as discovery is actually God's opening his book of creation and revealing his truth to us. Have you ever had a God idea? You're like, I don't know how to solve this problem. And you're like, ah, I know what I need to do. That's a God idea. That's God opening his book of creation and revealing his truth to us. And doesn't it seem so obvious after the fact? You're like, oh, I always think of jobs that I could do the second time would go so much quicker because half the time was spent figuring out how to do it. But once you figured out how to do it, that's why I love hiring contractors, because they've done this job over and over and they've figured out the best way to do it. Or I'll call my friends like Chris or Bob and say, hey, how do you do this? I can call Al too. He's done remodeling. And they would both all say that we've learned by doing or watching or asking people for a better way to do things. God has given his provision to all people. God has revealed himself to all people. Now we are responsible to how we respond to that common grace. There's a responsibility that we have. Romans 1 describes God's anger when people ignore his goodness and his truth. Romans 1:18, the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Everyone is operating from a worldview that either denies Christ or worships him. No one is objective or neutral. All humans possess God's truth of creation, organization, beauty, and appreciation for what is good. A person can use their God-given ingenuity to steal. You think about just even the latest, you know, as I read, technology is really good, but it's dangerous, right? You look at what they have attributed to the North Korean government, hacking into the banking system and literally stealing millions of dollars. This is not a movie. Some of you guys remember the movie where the guys first came out and wrote code and took pennies from everybody's account and became millionaires? This is not a movie. That technology, the ingenuity, the hours that it takes to hack and write code, you can use your ingenuity for good to make a better product at a cheaper cost, or you can use your ingenuity to steal and to better yourself. Even though we may have a worldview that denies Christ, deep in our hearts, God has imprinted his knowledge that he is a good God, that he is a creative God. And what people who are big thinkers call this is they call this the first order of beliefs. In other words, it's just what we've been talking about. God is a provisional God. God has revealed himself. It's like, we all know there's a God. This just didn't happen. I mean, we say, oh, just given enough time, then things would happen. And, you know, it's like taking the parts to a jet 767 and then having the wind blow and have it perfectly create a 767 jet airplane. It's like, well, that's ridiculous. But that's like easy compared to creating human beings and the universe. We're way more complicated than that. All the things that are dependent on each other, those things, as we look at those things, we all have a first order beliefs. What we live out consciously, intellectually, or culturally is called the second order of beliefs. The first order of beliefs is what we've been given. It's that standard issue of faith. The second order of beliefs is how we live it out. What it means is that we can have a second order of beliefs that says there is no God, but realize that it's a contradiction. As I live a contradiction, I say I trust God with all my heart, soul, you know, I worship God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, and I trust Him with everything. Well, then why do I worry? Because I consciously am making a decision to say, I know God is who He is, but I'm going to deny that. In fact, Paul says what we do by having that conflict is suppress the truth by our wickedness. We live in a contradiction to what we know about God and His goodness and yet live otherwise. That we know God's good, but yet we're going to use our talents for our own benefit. So what does common grace have to do with identity? What does it have to do with who I am and why I'm here? Let me just kind of summarize what we've been talking about. Understanding common grace, that standard issue that God has given, helps make sense of a confusing world. The confusing world being that God gives His gifts of wisdom to everyone across beliefs, across ability to use it to enrich and preserve and provide for the world. And it's why morally bankrupt people are given such good gifts. Have you ever been jealous of people who are really smart but didn't want to go to school? I wanted to be an engineer, electrical engineer, and I proceeded to get D's and F's. Guess what I did not have the gift for? Mathematics at that level. I could do simple algebra, but I couldn't do calculus. And it bothered me that there were guys who were so gifted at that but didn't want to go to school. I'm like, God, how come You gave them the ability to do that and they don't want to use it, and You gave me this desire and I don't have the ability? Well, it's because God's given gifts. It's not based on merit that you earned it or you're going to use it. It's God's given gifts. And so I'm like, okay, I understand that. If I understand common grace, that it makes more sense. It's like, oh, I get it. Even some people may recognize it and then may, that they have a gift, but they're not choosing to use it. Understanding common grace avoids being isolated and being self-sufficient. And it's kind of like what I talked about my dad, who wanted to just go to Christian mechanics, even though they were really crummy mechanics. As Christians, God, if He's given His gifts across culture, across humanity, that means that God has provided a great mechanic who may not believe and put working faith in Jesus Christ, but He's placed them in my community to go and use, to go and be blessed by His gift. And so as we to be isolated. You know what always bothered me too is music. I remember Christian music. There was a time, and in fact even still, date myself, that why is it all the good songs are outside the church? You know, and there was a group called the Apologetics. And they rewrote all those old rock and roll songs that other older people know. And they rewrote new words to them. You know, because you're like, how, you know, why can't Christians come up with that kind of music? That's God has given His gifts across culture. We can appreciate music and talent and gifts that God's given to bless and provide and care for us. Across culture, non-believers have been given good gifts by God that are intended to enrich our lives. Although they may be spiritually blind, God has given them as gifts to us. Understanding common grace also makes sense of non-believers who often exceed Christians morally and in wisdom. Have you ever met somebody who doesn't believe in God, but they're a way better worker, maybe way more honest than a guy who calls himself a Christian? Why? Because they're responding to God's common grace. They know there's a creator God. They sense there's a standard to which the God of heaven has called us to. And they recognize that that's what they got to live up to. Understanding common grace means that a good theology of sin is understanding that believers are never as good as our worldview should make us. Let me say that again. A good theology of sin means understanding believers are never as good as our worldview should make us. Because sometimes as Christians are saying, I put my faith in Jesus Christ, therefore I am the standard for what humanity should be. Right? That's not true. Because understanding sin means that we are equally all in need of a Savior. A good theology of grace means understanding that non-believers are never as messed up as their false worldview should make them. In other words, you're not following Jesus, you're not worshiping Him, your life should be just a car wreck. Your marriage should fall apart, your kids should hate you, and yet you look at them and like, oh my goodness, their life looks a lot better than mine. Why is that? Because of God's grace. He blesses them with a knowledge. He blesses them with understanding equally as every other believer, as every other person in humanity. As we understand common grace, it makes sense. And you'll see where I'm going in the end here. Understanding common grace brings freedom. Freedom to what? Freedom to work with, cooperate, respect, and appreciate non-believers. Because non-believers should find that Christians are the most appreciative and the most honoring of their love and work. To say, you know what? Only Christians don't do good work. Non-Christians do good work because God's gifted you. Man, I see you got a gift of relationship. You got a gift of sales. You got a gift of figuring things out that God's given you. Would you help me do this? Because I know God's gifted you to help me. I've been working on my on projects at home. I have an old hand pump that I've been working on. And I've been looking for those gifted people who understand how to put them together, and I haven't been able to, so I've been stumbling through myself. There's parts on the internet I've found, but they're the wrong size. And my friend Joe Fox has welded a few parts for me, and slowly I got to test it last week. I got in a bucket of water, and I just started pumping that sucker like crazy, and you'll never guess what happened. Water came out of it. It dribbled out because my leather seal isn't big enough to create enough suction. But I just think, what ingenuity. You know, so I called on the phone and said, hey, can you help me figure out how to get a better fit for this? And there's some people helping me on that. And they may or may not be believers. But God's gifted them to provide for that. The joy of life. Some things are just a joy and a pleasure, and some things are necessary. The question this morning is, how are you responding to the grace God has given you? Is your neighbor better at responding to God's common grace than you are? I started this question as like, what do you have that I don't have. And the reality is, you may be smarter because God's gifted you. You may have a great gift of parenting that I can learn from you. But what I have is an understanding that God's gifted us both. Loving God and loving people is to be fully human. Loving God and loving people is what gives us meaning. Because God created us to share in His love and His joy and His honor and glory. And that's our testimony, that we can come together with our neighbor, whether they're a believer or not, and have great conversations and find out who they are. I have doing a project at home, and I've had a cabinet builder here in town. And I don't think he's a believer. We've had some great conversations, but you know what I love about him? Every time we go away, I feel so encouraged because he loves his wife and he loves his kids. Here's a guy who's not a believer, and let me tell you what he said this last week when we met. He says, when I'm in public, I make sure that whatever I say about my wife is honoring of her. I never say anything negative about her. I may be in a store and we're shopping, and I'll say, honey, that is a great idea. Even though I think there's some other good ideas. He says, honey, I think that is a great idea. He says, because I want an example to people how to treat a woman. This is a guy who's not a believer. And he walked away. I said, you know, I said, Eric, I appreciate you. I really enjoy every time I talk to you. Because we talk about our kids and talk about how they're growing, talk about the challenges. And yet he's not a believer. But yet I feel more partnered with him than some of my Christian friends. But I pray in that knowledge as I share that who I am is because of the same God that's gifted him. I pray that someday he will want to come and visit this church that I pastor and meet you. I pray that he would come and understand that God is the one who gives meaning, that we all fall short. But God's the one who, through Jesus Christ, bridges that gap. And brings satisfaction and brings it all together in an eternity of perfection that we can't even imagine, but yet we crave for. We get to help our neighbor see God's grace given to both of us. We get to share how Jesus redeems us when we fail to live up to what we know is right. Let's pray. Dear Lord, I just thank you for your common grace. I love guys like Timothy Keller and others who write, and even John Calvin back in the Reformation and Martin Luther. These guys that you gifted for our benefit. And there's current people, and maybe people in this room, even as they wrestle with who you are to make sense of this world. Lord, we thank you for your goodness. We thank you for your provision. We thank you for the knowledge that you've given us. Lord, the knowledge that you've given all humanity. Lord, would you help us to use that understanding to love people, to engage with them, to appreciate them, because you've given them gifts to benefit us, and we have gifts that benefit them. Lord, so that we can, and together, turn to you and say, God, would you redeem our hearts? You've given us gifts, Lord. Would you teach us how to use them for good? In Jesus' name, amen.